229 HE Atlanta.
The most listened to sports station in the South. WCNN North Atlanta, a Dickey Broadcasting Station. Atlanta's sports station, 680 The Fan, on FM at 93.7.
Elvis had a policy. Always take great care to look your best in public.
And you adhere to this policy.
Yeah, when you go out there. Right now, I look like a male hooker.
You can put away your tool.
You'd have to be a gigolo, Chuck.
No, Hoyt's off his game. That was kind of a rough edit there. Come on, Hoyt.
I appreciated it. You see, I think your view of Hoyt changed when you were on vacation. You like in your mind, you were thinking, no, it's always really good. There's some times where it's a little force-fed, but it's still funny. It happens.
Is he coming to Birmingham or not?
Yes. In fact,
I heard he was, and then I heard he wasn't.
There was some stuff that came up work-wise, but it's been taken care of. He'll be going down there Sunday afternoon. I think we're going to try and, play golf or do something for a little while. And then by Sunday evening, we're all going to get together. I'm going to bring this up later on in the show. Actually, this hour, this is the Chuck and Chernoff Show. Carlos Medina subbing in for Matt Chernoff. Chuck Oliver back from vacation. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we will hear from Chris Landry. He'll join the show. Talk to him about some Falcon-related things, and also a little later on in the show, too. We have Sunday evening plans for SEC Media Days. We'll get into that in about 20 minutes. We got to make sure that you're on board and that everything is set up. I'll just tell you this. It does include a power hour.
No, media guides on Sunday. You can register now. For the first time ever, you can register on Sunday afternoon from 3 to 6.
No.
And they give you your flash drive
The listeners don't care about that. You care about that, because then you go in your room.
You get ahead of the game, finally. Normally, you had to kind of wing it first day with no media guides, because they give you the media guides, but you're already there.
You have a power hour coming up, so you just have to focus on that in about 20 minutes. But right now, there's such a thing in this league, in the NBA, as NBA machismo. Like, certain guys that will have respect no matter what because of what they were able to accomplish in the league.
Well, Charles Oakley had that, and it wasn't just about rings. Because Charles Oakley... I think, have you seen him lately?
No.
He could still fight MMA.
I was going to say, they go one of two ways. They blow up or they get in really great shape.
Like Patrick Ewing on that Snickers commercial where the basketball jersey isn't tucked in.
Yeah.
Okay, he went that way.
He's a big man.
Charles Oakley, I think, is in better shape right now than before. So you're right, it's one of two ways, but that's just, I'm a tough guy. The other machismo is... Look at his hand with all these rings.
And that is the thing that we now have going on. And you hear guys like Reggie Miller. You hear guys like Charles Barkley. Charles was great this morning on The Rude Awakening. We'll play a couple of cuts from that. You get this impression from listening to all these guys who spent their years with their teams. Remember, there was still NBA free agency. You could move around if you want, but there was something to, hey, I'm the flagship right here in this town. And if we're winning it, it's going to be on my back. This NBA machismo is almost this deal of, oh, you're going to leave your town to go chase a ring? Well, you know what? Your ring doesn't count. You had to go do this. It doesn't count.
When it got – see, I don't know that it was just blatant when – and I'm going to go way, way back. We all know the name Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Do you know where he started his NBA career?
Milwaukee.
And he won a title in Milwaukee.
Right. That's their last title, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so then after, 4 years or 5 years, he demands a trade – and he wants to go to the Lakers because Wilt Chamberlain had left. And so like a year or two later, they just slide Kareem in. And so it worked out for everybody. But he left Milwaukee, A, with a title already in his hand. But he realized, he's like, if I'm going to really compete every single year and the rest of my personality, because
I want to do movies, I want to do all these things, absolutely.
Yeah, the music, the movies, all that, then I need to be in L.A. So he kind of forced that trade. That was one thing about a guy trying to complete his career. It wasn't just about rings, although he's like, I want some rings. I think Peyton and Malone back in 2003, 2004, that was the first time it got really blatant that we're going ring shopping.
Yeah.
That I'm leaving Utah, I'm leaving Seattle, and we're going to be the third or fourth best players on this starting lineup, but we want rings. And we all kind of ceded the NBA championship to them until Detroit did what Detroit did. That was when it got blatant, and the idea of ring shopping really got transparent. And it kind of left an unimpressed look on a lot of people.
Yeah, at this, and you hear it from all the old school guys, and I completely agree with it. When you have guys who spent their entire careers in certain markets, some of them where they won their titles, and they just look at it and say, okay, Kevin Durant, no fault that Kevin Durant went to a better situation, what he perceived to be a better situation. It's his right. His contract was done. He can do whatever he wanted. But it almost feels like the rest of the old heads now say, oh, you're going to go get a ring with them? Well, it doesn't count. You know, John Sally got multiple rings at the end of the Lakers bench, mm-hmm. holding on to that at the end. He can't ever sit back.
You know, he got a ring with the Bulls, didn't he?
Yeah, but he can't ever sit back and then say, well, hey, I won titles with this team. No, you won those in Detroit. Those other ones, you were just hanging on. You know, Robert Horry had an active role even throughout the entirety of his career. You don't get to have certain guys who are the 12th man, 13th man. Richard Jefferson can now say, I want a ring. If he'd never gotten on the court for Cleveland, everyone would say, you were riding the coattails and you want a ring. And even though Kevin Durant's going to be an important player team.
Mike Miller, I think, has three rings.
Yeah. And I would say for two of them, he was an important factor. He was a sixth man for that team. But at a certain point, he was just kind of riding along. I do want to play this Charles Barkley audio, but we also have a College Football Today coming up in a couple minutes. What do you got coming up, Chuck?
What the schools themselves have told us what this year in the SEC won't be about. I want to say something, though. I haven't heard Barkley's cuts. I don't care how you win a ring.
Oh, I think
so
it matters.
So many people, like me and you, who never played pro sports and never went through it, and we act like winning rings is so damn easy, and we want to criticize LeBron because he didn't have a ring, and then he didn't have more than one ring, and okay, now you got three, and so we won't criticize you anymore.
He's got one.
He's got three.
No, he's got one.
He went ring shopping, and he also wanted to live in South Beach and pay no state income tax.
And he had to go get himself a super team. He's got one.
Okay, and then he won a city's first title in half a century.
And that's the one that counts. Which one matters the most?
Like Kevin Durant, the Cleveland one.
Exactly.
But what kind of compliment is it to LeBron that we're saying which of his three world titles is the most impressive? Or maybe it's his gold medal or whatever. Kevin Durant, what a choke job in Oklahoma. Winning a ring ain't easy. The Golden State Warriors, well, what'd you follow it up with? Choke job. It's not easy. I don't care how you get a ring. I do not care.
All right, here's Charles Barkley. He joined the Rude Awakening this morning, a really cool interview. You can check it out at 680thefan.com. This is where he was talking about when you're in a particular place, he still got to face the best teams out there where everybody had talent.
I would love to play with Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and those guys. I wouldn't have went there just to win the championship. I don't think guys are killing guys, but I feel good that I competed against Bird, Magic, Michael, and those guys. I'm good with that.
So I think if you win one at the end like that, it just doesn't count. If Charles Barkley had jumped over to another team,
like Houston Scottie Pippen and Clyde Drexler,
and they attempted to,
and Hakeem,
and that in my mind it would have been no.
Why?
Doesn't count. Because it wasn't you. You weren't the lead dog. NBA titles are won by who's the team and who's the lead dog, with the exception of the 2004 Pistons. Every single champion you can go over the last 25 years, there's a guy that you say that is the catalyst as to why they won that ring. And when you have guys that are jumping from one team to the next, like, for instance, Adam Silver, he took a team away from an ultra bigoted old man. That was in the best interest of the league. Then that was always his point. Somehow slowing this thing down is in the best interest of the league. If you've seen the Vegas numbers, there's three teams that have an opportunity to win a title, and it's really only two. And everybody else...
Is it Cleveland, San Antonio, and Golden State?
And that's it. And it's not even close. The next closest team, Chuck, is 22-1 is Boston. That is the group. This league has now become so top-heavy, if Adam Silver had any balls to him, he would find a way to put an end to this sort of stuff, because it's a watered-down product. It's a crappy product.
Again, it doesn't cheapen the ring of whoever winds up winning.
Oh, absolutely it does. You brought up David West. Had David West been a component of the Indiana Pacers and they won a ring, you would go, that's a big part. You're talking about a guy who's going to try and find one little place where he can hopefully come off the bench and get some minutes and win a ring. Do you look at Leandro Barbosa and you're like, hey, he's a champion?
Forrest DL, how many rings does he have? Two?
He's got one.
Oh, he's got one. Okay, it's not cheap.
But he was an important part of that team.
Who's the last guy on those benches for the Spurs?
Sean Marks.
Okay, that's not cheap. He got a ring.
But he wasn't Kevin Durant either. There's a difference in when you're the lead dog somewhere and you decide to go jump somewhere else
Golden
because
State,
it's easier.
If Golden State wins a title this coming season, Kevin Durant's going to be part of that. See, I think that Kevin Durant would be even less guilty than Sean Marks.
I just don't think that it will count as much in the eyes of NBA fans and everybody, because he had to find the path of least resistance. And if you're a lead dog in this league, if you're everything you're cracked up to be, people want to see you do it where you were.
Like Dominique Wilkins, he never got a ring, and he never went ring chasing. He went contract chasing.
Right.
And I don't begrudge him that at all. But if he would have decided at the end of his career, you know what, I'm going to go to whoever the best team in the league would have been, New York Knicks, and I'm going to sit the bench as they try to win an NBA title. Didn't they win a title with Spree and Larry Johnson?
No, they lost to the Spurs in 99.
Okay, well, they could have beat him. Then that wouldn't have been cheap at all, not to me.
I think
get a ring, man.
We just feel differently about this when it comes to the best players
in
the league.
You don't have to go to the worst team in the league and elevate them to win a championship for it to count.
LeBron just brought a title to a city that hadn't won in how long?
I understand.
I'm just
saying, but his rings in Miami still count.
If you want the ultimate lexicon, you do it like that.
And from Charles Barkley, who looked around after, 5 years in Philadelphia and said, this
send
sucks.
Me to Phoenix.
I want to go to Phoenix.
Sure.
And then they're in the NBA Finals. And then after not winning in Phoenix, he was
By the way, was he the best player in Phoenix?
Yes, he was.
He was the league MVP.
I'm going to Houston because I want to win a championship, and they just won two straight. Didn't he go there right after their?
Just after, yeah.
And I want to play with Hakeem and Drexler and then Scottie Pippen, and that's what I want to do here. And I love Charles, biggest Charles guy in his town. Biggest Charles Barkley guy in this town. I can't hear him talking about that. What do you think he did at the end?
I'll go with Reggie Miller. That was the one where I completely respect the way that he went about it. Yes, Charles has a little bit of a back history with that, but it's still the same thing. These guys don't respect these dudes.
Boo, Carlos.
Chasing this thing. All right, let's get to a CFT.
With a kingly run, touchdown.
Chuck Oliver's College Football Today, brought to you by Duffy Realty of Atlanta. Real simple, real savings, real results.
Good to beat it, King.
You do what you do, which is spend time with your family, make everybody happy, you go on vacation, you go to the Little League games, you spend Saturdays doing yard work with your wife, whatever it is that you value and brings happiness in your home, you do all that. Let Rhonda and her staff sell your house, and they do virtually all the work. You get virtually all the money, which is a pretty good deal. Duffy Realty of Atlanta.com. All right. The schools themselves have told us what this year in the SEC won't be about. Did you see the list of players attending SEC Media Days has been released? And it is an impressive list. Every single school, there is just great player after great player after great player. Alabama, for example, they're bringing Jonathan Allen, who I believe will be an all-conference player and potentially a first-round draft pick. They are bringing O.J. Howard, who, I don't know, caught like three passes all of last season, and every Sunday, Alabama fans were thinking, why don't we throw the ball to him more? And then Eddie Jackson, who could be an all-conference safety and also a first-round draft choice. Alabama's bringing three really, really good football players who could all be first-round picks. They're not bringing a quarterback. Auburn's not bringing a quarterback. Florida's not bringing a quarterback. Georgia's not bringing a quarterback. LSU is not bringing a quarterback. There are exactly three schools in the SEC who are bringing quarterbacks, one of them whom, Trevor Knight at Texas A&M, has never taken a snap as a member of an SEC team. The only two schools other than Texas A&M who's bringing a quarterback, Tennessee and Ole Miss. Now, I can't tell you right now what this is going to be the year of in the SEC. Maybe it'll be the year of the coach. The year of the stadium, because everybody's got a good stadium. But it surely ain't going to be the year of the quarterback in the SEC.
Chuck Oliver's College Football Today, brought to you by Duffy Realty of Atlanta on the College Football Voice of the South, 680 The Fan.
All right, coming up next, the ugliest indication of just how big SEC Media Days have become. I'm Carlos Medina, subbing in for Matt Chernoff. He's Chuck Oliver. This is Chuck and Chernoff Show right here on 680 The Fan. It is the Chuck and Chernoff Show. Carlos Medina subbing in one more day for Matt Chernoff. He'll be returned from vacation tomorrow. Chuck Oliver, though, back after his trip over to the beaches of, I believe, somewhere in Mexico.
Puerto Morales. It's outside Cancun.
Very nice. Coming up in 10 minutes, we will ask Chris Landry about whether this Falcon player can take another year of the pounding and still be productive as well.
Okay, I know we got to hustle. We're getting Landry on, but can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Because you have critters, right?
Sure, yeah. Got two of them.
Matt has three.
Right.
And it's just a litter that he loads up in the truck with his wife, and they head off.
He just throws snacks in, and they go jump in.
Is that a vacation for a parent?
No, not at all. It's actually just a lot of work. In fact,
my parents had four kids, and they used to load us up and take us to St. Simons or Myrtle Beach or where. I was like, I realize now that can't be a vacation for the adult.
We are looking forward to my wife and I. She's going to have hand surgery next week, and so my in-laws are going to take our kids. So when we're at SEC Media Days, we're actually going to get, by the time we get back, a Friday and Saturday, we'll be alone. That is a vacation for us, because when we did Disney with two kids, five and two, that was work. It was work the entire time. Also, we are going to bring up something about SEC Media Days, a Sunday evening plan that we have to make sure Chuck is on board with. But right now, Chuck, talk about some of the ugliness that we are going to have to deal with over at SEC Media Days this upcoming week.
Yeah, I have been there through all weird scenarios. I was there the year that Philip Fulmer got subpoenaed. Car pulls up out front, and Philip's just going to hustle on in and do his duties. And unlike most coaches who get there a little early and try to kind of get ahead of the game, you know, it's kind of like taking classes during summer school so that once it properly starts, you can relax a little bit. Tommy Tuberville, if you remember, used to show up a day early, and he'd just do all the radio row and get that out of the way, and then he'd do his, you know, the required visits. Well, Fulmer is showing up last minute because there was a lawsuit involving a couple of Alabama assistant coaches, I believe, and he was named in this lawsuit. And so he shows up, gets out of the car, and he has a process server hand him a subpoena.
Oops.
At SEC Media Days. And I was standing, I don't know, 30 feet away, and I just heard stuff going on. And so I saw the very end of it. I was like, oh, that's tremendous. That'll be a story that'll stand the test of time. A coach getting served a subpoena at SEC Media Days, only in the Southeastern Conference. That's what makes it so warm and fuzzy. Now, at least he showed up, because in 2004, Phil Fulmer skipped Media Days. It's the only time in 16 years that I've been going that a coach blew off Media Days because he knew, I think it was a libel and a defamation suit that he was going to be subpoenaed in. And the last thing Phil Fulmer wanted to do was, by governmental standards, have to go under oath. I mean, he'd tell the media all the time, that's not what happened. I can probably lean in and give you that Bill Clinton. That's not what happened.
But you don't want to put your hand on any Bible and then say to the government, yeah, no, I'll tell you the whole
thing.
Yeah,
truth. If you lie to the media, so what?
If
you lie under oath, you go to jail. Okay, what was that? Marion Jones, didn't she go to jail?
Yeah, they don't kid around with that
okay.
stuff.
So Media Days has always been sort of a SEC circus anyway. But now we have schools timing announcements of player discipline and settling federal lawsuits around the four-day event in Birmingham. Jeffrey Simmons, I said it was masterful. When Mississippi State announced in Destin, as Dan Mullen is like wheeling his carry-on out the front of the hotel down in Destin to the rental car, oh, by the way, Jeffrey Simmons, we're going to let him play. So he can say accurately,
I told you all in Destin.
Hey, we addressed this, man. It's just masterful. And so now you've got 6 weeks between Destin and SEC Media Days. And so Dan Mullen is going to, I promise you, Dan Mullen is going to be asked about it. And his response is going to be, that's in the past. We're looking forward. And that's all we're doing in Starkville. We're looking forward. Now that UT has settled the federal lawsuit, it had a trial date of May 2018. There wasn't a chance in the world that Bush Jones was going to let this thing hang around for two more years. $2.48 million Tennessee pays to the, I think it was eight accusers and their attorneys, $2.48 million. Bush Jones next week, the first question will be about the lawsuit, and he will give a response.
Coach Jones, how about that lawsuit?
That's been settled. We're confident with how we do things at the university, and we are looking to the future, nothing else. I promise you that the timing of this settlement, the last thing they wanted to do is just kind of throw Butch Jones into 1,800 credentialed media with a pending lawsuit. Now they have a settled lawsuit.
We were fortunate to have Coach Jones on a couple of weeks ago, and he was having to address it, and even he pointed it out. no, this hasn't been any kind of drain on recruiting. We've still been able to go out there. But ultimately, that's the thing. You want it to go away so that there is nothing ever hanging over your head, especially when you're in kids' living rooms. You don't want to have them, well, coach, what's that going on at your university? No, now it's a dead issue.
I want to talk about the weight room. No, well, what about this lawsuit I keep saying?
I mean, there's women who have federal lawsuits against you.
Have you seen our players' lounge? It's awesome. We got Xbox.
Right before we get over to Chris Landry, we want to finish up with this. We've got these plans for SEC Media Days, and the plan is, as of Sunday, is to execute something we've been talking about for the better part of 6 months, when set up the broadcast table, set up all of our systems, and do the Hoyt and Lowe's podcast featuring Chuck Oliver, and to actually do a power hour.
Come on, minute. Get around here. I'm thirsty.
Because no one's around yet, so it would be...
This is Sunday night?
Kind of our own private little thing. We would be the only people basically in that lobby.
I've only done a power hour twice in my life, and the last time I did, I was 22.
About the same for me.
That's a shot of beer a minute for 60 minutes.
For 60 minutes. And it ends up being, I believe...
Like 8 beers or something?
I thought it was like 5.5 or 6.5. Something along those lines.
Oh, okay, you're right. I'm sorry.
Okay, but that's the idea.
That'll make a big difference.
And then we could start discussing some of the issues of the day, SEC Media Days, maybe station personnel, maybe...
Maybe our bosses,
yeah,
maybe what
I mean,
we really
of
think
it.
Of our PD.
Yeah, time for a quick story.
And that's what we would get. That would be like minute 45, where suddenly Chuck is ready to tell you all about, you know... Legion Field 2.
Like eight minutes in, Chuck, tell me the best thing about your wife. 52 minutes in, Chuck, tell me the worst thing about your wife.
And we'd be able to record all of it. I think
hey,
it
that sounds
be
awesome,
popular.
Carlos. That sounds great.
So are you in, though? Because I think it'd be awesome to do it.
Probably and not. You got to remember, my day on Monday.
But remember, the start times for everything isn't until 12:30 Eastern.
I am employed for exactly one reason.
But we're going to be down there at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's plenty of time.
That one reason is college football. And so you're waiting to the eve, literally 12 hours before the biggest event related to the one reason I'm employed starts. And that's where you want me to consume 60 shots of beer in 60 minutes. For someone who essentially... doesn't drink. I was just at an all-inclusive for 5 days. I think I had two alcoholic beverages. I think two. And they'd hand you can have champagne for breakfast if you want.
Yeah, the mimosas are pretty readily available in those things.
I think over 5 days I had two alcoholic beverages, but you're saying, hey, Chuck, 60 shots in 60 minutes.
Hoyt's going to do it.
Come on, minute.
Hoyt,
get around here. I'm thirsty.
Hoyt got alcohol poisoning before the most important home game Georgia's played since 2008.
And that's all I really remember about the Georgia-Alabama game, really. I don't even think about the score or anything that happened. I just think Hoyt was in the hospital.
All right, you go to Beer Fest, where you drink a lot of beer.
Yeah.
You have is there a keg at your house right now?
In the basement, yeah. So, yeah, I'll consider training for this. All right, let's get to Chris Landry.
He's worked alongside Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, and now for some reason, Chuck and Chernoff. It's time to Ask the Scout with veteran NFL scout Chris Landry on Atlanta's football station, 680 The Fan, on FM at 93.7.
If you haven't already, you need to. Football season is right around the corner. You got to go to LandryFootball.com. Join up there where you can get all the exclusive information that we get from Chris Landry, scout, coach, everything that
There's
matters.
College information there, too.
College information as well. Also,
yep.
We do have a 50% discount for the first month. The code is Atlanta, or a 25% discount for the first year. That code is 680 The Fan, so go check it out, LandryFootball.com. And Chris, I want to start here. Devontae Freeman was such a special player last year for the Atlanta Falcons, but we are talking about a running back that goes about 205, 210 pounds. Tevin Coleman obviously has to pick up a lot of this slack. Is there that possibility or that wonder of, can this guy do it again over the course of an entire NFL season, given his size?
I think there's always some of that. I think it's a little bit overblown. If you look at guys that are a little bit smaller, it's really, to me, is if a guy is thin and not well put together, particularly in the lower body, I have more problems with it. I don't worry about, you know, guy that's 2'5", 2'10", well put together. I think they tend to avoid well. I think in some cases they can be a little more durable, but that's to me, not directly related only to size, but to other issues in running style. I think what they believe, though, they want to have both of them fresh, you know, Coleman and Freeman, and they want to have a heavy rotation this year. That's what they want to do, is get that running game going. And I'm a believer, and this is a big part of the overall theory of why backs, quote-unquote, are devalued, but they're really not. It's you need to have multiple backs. I mean, not just for styles or situations, but you need to have fresh. That's how you really win games. You win by scoring points and then running the football to close out the game. And you better have two or three, because they're not going to stay injury. I don't care what their size are through the entire season.
Chris, growing up in Atlanta, I think it was by like Tony Casillas' third year. You know, it would always be a headline of a contract problem. And I was like, no, he just don't like two-a-days. And there are a lot of veterans look around and like, I don't need this garbage. Tony Gonzalez at the end of his career. Are we headed here for a holdout, which you almost never have anymore in the NFL? Are we headed there with Von Miller?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's going to be done by next week. I believe that the deadline is the 14th. So a week from today, I expect it to be done. I don't see it. You never know, of course, but this is the typical stance near the deadline. The player, you know, has that leverage to threaten this or that. I'll sit out. Listen, he's not going to. Would he be in a position, obviously, to miss summer camp? Yeah, but you know, getting a deal, he's not guaranteed that. So I would expect something's going to get done, and I don't expect it before the last hour. It's not going to be a good thing for Denver if he sits out most of the year. Guys don't sit out once the checks come. And to remind everybody, players get paid in 17 installments at the start of the season. The money that they get for mini camp, first of all, the fines and can add up, but the money they get is basically per diem in training camp. So you're right. If they're in a position to do it, you see a lot of them do it, but they don't usually hold out when the big checks come.
Chris Landry joins us, LandryFootball.com. You got to visit that website and become a member for this upcoming football season. And Chris, saw a little piece of news out there that Eli Manning is talking about the Giants being definitely a playoff team for this upcoming season. Obviously very aggressive in free agency, looking to rebuild that defensive line. But really over the last 3 years, you know, he's improved in McAdoo's offense, but it's still about that offensive line in front of him. It doesn't look like the types where the Giants have had success in the past.
You're right, and it's a problem, and they're expecting Eric Flowers to be the answer at left tackle. I'm not sure about that. I think, you know, certainly Pugh at left guard, and Weston Richburg's been really good, but the other components, the other three-fifths of it, have not played very well, and when they can't run the football, you can't protect Eli. It's been proven that if you give Eli time, he can beat you. If you can't run the football, you can't protect him, he's going to be a mess, and they've been a mess. So the offensive line and the defensive line have not been the staples that they were in their Super Bowl runs. That has to change. As far as, you know, Snacks Harrison certainly can help them. Hankins, Olivier Vernon, they put a lot of money in. So they still have a lot of questions. That division to me is wide open. No one looks like, to me, to have a really good playoff caliber roster. There's holes in everyone, but I think it's kind of wide open. I mean, Dallas could be in the mix, the Giants, the Redskins, maybe even the Eagles with some improvements on defense could be in the mix. So, I think everybody kind of looks 9-7 to me in that division.
I think because the coaching in the NFL is so darn good, you know, on the defensive side, that no quarterback in his 20s is ever a complete product. What can Cam Newton – he just won the MVP, but what can Cam Newton do? What's the next step for him to develop?
Develop more as a passer. I mean, he's still more of a thrower. I mean, his ability to run the football allows him to make plays in the passing game. He can make some really good throws. What he doesn't do, and it's not something that they're ever going to do a whole lot in this offense, is be a good progressive read guy, because they're going to give him some run-pass options. But I think making more, quicker decisions from within the pocket, not just the escape and run, but being able to find that second and tertiary receiver or things that could maybe take his game to the next level. Because when you look at the athletic quarterbacks that are really threat running the football, if they can also run to throw, in addition to just run to run, they become really tough to defend. Because I think the toughest thing for defensive coordinators is not to defend an athletic quarterback as a runner, but to defend and cover and stay on your coverage longer when you're trying to pressure a quarterback. You can't get to him. He's able to escape and run and then beat you on coverage that you can't hold. That's the toughest thing. So if he can do a little bit more of that, then he takes his game to a whole different stratosphere.
Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com joins us right here on the Chuck and Chernoff Show on 680 The Fan.
And, you know, Chris, to continue on that, I've always said one of the hardest things is a quarterback, when he starts to move around, to keep his eyes downfield.
Yes.
So many quarterbacks start looking at, you know, all right, where's the hit coming from, and now I'm going to run. Blake Bortles does a great job of it. But it's – and I only know that from college. It is rare for even an NFL quarterback – to consistently be able to keep his eyes downfield when he starts scrambling around.
Yeah, you can't look at pressure. You have to feel it. You have to know where it's coming from. And this comes with experience, though. If you know where the alignment, where the pressure is coming from, and you got to have really good peripheral vision, which is, we do a lot of different studies with all players, not just quarterbacks, but on sight and visual acuity and being able to see things peripherally. Vision is really important, not just knowing what you're looking at, but literally your vision, your peripheral vision is key. And you're so right. You've got to be able to keep your eyes downfield, because if you're looking at the pressure, then you're not seeing the guy coming open. And so then you're just running. You're just avoiding. And so being able to feel it, not see it, and be able to react to it is pivotal.
Chris, I want to move to the college game for this question, because this player, when it comes to his production, has been every bit as impressive. Even he's doubled some of the numbers that Von Miller, one of his predecessors, did at Texas A&M. Miles Garrett, I think the only thing he's missing that Jadeveon Clowney had going into his junior year is the big hit against a Michigan player. But this guy just screams top five player as an edge rusher in the SEC.
No question about it. And I think he's a top five guy in next year's draft. He's that talented. He's a big-time player. You know, he was highly recruited. He's gotten bigger, and he's filled out even more and more. You know, he really plays that rush in. John Chavis is going to turn him loose. I think he's his – when people ask me, who's the top player in college football this year, he's the guy. And, you know, who's the top maybe two or three guys that will likely come out in the draft next year or be in the draft process? The guy that I think about the most is Myles Garrett, and certainly there'll be quarterbacks in other positions, but this guy can really get after it, and you know, that is high praise, but I think it's very warranted, and you do see some Von Miller in him, and he's a special player. He's one of the guys that that came out of high school that you could see greatness, but you never know how that's going to turn out. He's fit the bill and done it very well.
Football season right around the corner. Go to LandryFootball.com. You get the 50% off discount for your first month with the code Atlanta. Also, the 25% discount for the first year with the code 680TheFan. Chris, really appreciate the time today.
Hey, thank you so much, guys. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, thank you. Have a good one. All right, coming up next, Chuck, Cam Newton has been put on the spot.
Oh, man, you put me on the spot.
But this is a good spot. That's coming up next right here on the Chuck and Chernoff Show, 680 The Fan. It is the Chuck and Chernoff Show. He's Chuck Oliver. I'm Carlos Medina, subbing in for Matt Chernoff. The boys all be back to our normal spots tomorrow. Vacations will be over with, and then we'll pretty much batten down the hatches as football season arrives for us. We'll be in Birmingham, broadcasting live beginning on Monday, taking you all the way through Thursday. Oh, we've got it lined out. Like, we feel pretty good about 10 of the 12 coaches right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a matter of, like, Les Miles, who never really comes downstairs. But
I've gotten him one time since he's been head coach there. And so, it was upstairs.
Yeah, and so we might have to do it where we send you upstairs and just say, okay, grab a couple minutes with him if possible.
Dan Mullen, who will come on the show, Dan Mullen come on anytime we call him.
Yeah.
Media days?
He doesn't want any part of it. Not like that. Not with the circus.
No. So we'll see what happens. Can I apologize to Brian Hoyt?
Wait, hold on. You got an apology? You really have changed on vacation.
This Power Hour thing that potentially will happen on Sunday night.
Happening.
I haven't done one of these in 20-plus years. And Brian Hoyt, there's a chance, like, when his baby is born, bottle for the baby, bottle for Hoyt.
Oh, yeah.
Got formula in the baby's bottle.
He's got vodka.
Bud Light, something. He drinks as much as any... He has no clue about how a Power Hour works.
Yeah, that's
none.
Well, but you know what? I think he's still trying to do it in the torturous way, where you pour your own beer.
No,
by the time that you get to, you know, hey, I'm on shot six. Well, there's a chance the beer's a little warmer.
He's like, what about like the final two or three shots and the beer's warm? I was like, there aren't the final two or three shots. You open a 12-ounce can and you pour an ounce and a half three times,
right?
And then an ounce and a half three more times.
So y'all been arguing about this for a while.
I'm not drinking his beer.
You get 2 minutes into this thing. You're like halfway through the third round of three shots, but that beer is empty. So the beer's going to get warm in 2 minutes.
But you also have to consider this, too. It also depends on the beer you want to shoot, because there's certain, like, what Hoyt likes to drink, I don't like. I'm not a big IPA guy. He's going to treat himself right with whatever he picks out.
You realize that by probably 35 minutes in,
I hope so,
I will have consumed more beer in 35 minutes than I have in probably the last 4 years.
I was going to say, you, even when we were at events, you might have a drink, and that's rare. If
maybe,
it's a drink, yeah.
Maybe. I'm just really disappointed that Hoyt has such a rudimentary understanding of how this power hour works.
It's also the math of it all. It's kind of messing with him. You ever seen when he like starts to trying to, you know, figure out how much time we should leave in the show to make sure we hit, you know, the Braves radio network?
Oh my god,
time?
It's like he's looking at Chinese algebra.
Oh, and he's so mad the entire time. He's like counting on his fingers. He's like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. God, Chuck, stop talking to me.
You know, see, when he takes his shoes off, you know that he's really deep into this arithmetic.
That's when things have gotten really complicated. All right, Cam Newton has made the jump into a new spot. NFL has had their voting going on the top players, and keep in mind, it's always year to year. You know, last year, Cam Newton was number 73. Well, he's a league MVP. He jumped all the way to number one in the NFL. I thought it was important with what you asked Chris Landry about how do you improve. You can't improve beyond number one.
Yeah,
you would think it was a step back, but he can get better.
The raw production equaled an MVP award. So MVP, hey, I'm the best player in the league. He was the most, I think, overpowering player. You know, what they did against the Giants when they had that huge lead, and then Odell Beckham started making some plays, and the Giants tied it, and he's like, yeah, I'm good.
Zip, 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 zip. I got this. Don't worry, guys.
And I'm going to run the ball a little bit, and now we're good, and we're going to win anyway. What Chris Landry was saying about he's a thrower, I agree with that. And there are passes. I mean, he'll throw a 35-yard pass that gets about 7 feet off the ground at its highest point. And, I mean, it's almost like a video game. Hey, I want the ball to go over there. There it is. There are times when you see the blitz and you just kind of loft it up and let it come down at 35 yards. And the receiver, you know, when
he gets beyond those linebackers right in front of the safeties, and it's a beautiful throw.
When the ball is snapped, he's lined up just inside the numbers, and you know with touch passing, he's going to wind up just outside the numbers, and you just got to make that perfect pass because here comes the blitz, and I'm just going to kind of loft it up there. He doesn't do that yet because he is still young enough and physical enough that just sheer arm strength, he can throw a 35-yard out just as soon as he pick up a cinder block and throw it. But at some point, you do develop into a total quarterback. And the scary part is that he's already an MVP, and he's not close to a finished product.
I think what's scary, Chuck, is that so much of that touch passing, so many of those things, it all depends on the athlete you're throwing to. He didn't have Kelvin Benjamin at all last year.
No.
And that's the kind of thing where you would see him throw those back shoulder rockets down the seams to Greg Olsen, and Greg Olsen would make the crazy adjustment and come down in the end zone with it. Okay, that's what Devin Funchess is expected to become. Oh, by the way, then there's Kelvin Benjamin, who we saw that his rookie year. If you're talking about someone who's been given all the tools, and it's taken some time, but been given all the tools to run a dynamic offense. Remember, they were one of the top scoring teams in the entire NFL, and he hasn't really scratched the surface of those little things yet. It's scary. It's absolutely scary to think of what they could be capable of this upcoming year.
Yeah, and again, he is. See, you know what it reminds me of on some Sundays, and this is really rare. It reminds me of everybody has either played on a high school team, or whether you coached or you just go to games or whatever. Everybody has a couple of examples of that Friday night guy that is just better than everybody, and he plays tailback and safety, and he's punter and kicker, and he's the best player on the field. Like Hines Ward. at Georgia.
Could do whatever he wanted.
I'm going to throw the ball. I'm going to run the ball. I'm going to catch the ball. I'm going to, you know, Hines Ward, you could have let him play safety. He'd have been the best defensive player on the field for Georgia. And that, like Friday nights, everybody has examples of that. Saturdays, sometimes. In the NFL, it is the shortest of short lists where I'm just better than everybody else, so I don't have to play proper technique. I don't have to have touch. I don't have to have nuance to my game. And if anybody's thinking, what about the Super Bowl? Because Michael Orr got his ass kicked by Von Miller. That doesn't mean a lot to about Cam Newton.
But I think that's very important, too. You know, on any given Sunday, Khalil Mack can be the biggest, most badass player on the field, and that's what he is. But 16 Sundays, that's really difficult to do. Von Miller, for that Sunday, was the biggest badass on the field. Cam Newton, for the most part, for 14 games last year, was that for 14 games.
Against
every
NFL
single time.
Players, against NFL players and NFL coaching and NFL scouting reports.
Against grown men who their business is, okay, this is what I'm going to do to you. And so, yeah, I'm right there with you. Just because it happened in the Super Bowl, I don't think it takes away from what he's going to be for this upcoming year. But it's again, it'll be scary. It's something the Falcons definitely have to deal with. All right, coming up next, it's not just Atlanta that loses players that they don't show love to. It's also happening everywhere else. That's coming up next right here on the Chuck and Chernoff Show, 680 The Fan. College football.